May 21st, 2020. It's a big honor on my show. I've got Carolyn Yeager and Pete Pop Heracles. Carolyn Yeager is the author of this book, The Artist Within the Warlord, Adolf Hitler You've Never Known. She's quite the scholar on Adolf Hitler. And Pete Pop Heracles has written many articles for American Free Press and the Barnes Review. So today we're going to critique Christopher John Bjerknes, who claims that Adolf Hitler was a communist Zionist shill working for the communists all along. So welcome to the show, and thanks for being on, Carolyn. It's the first time I think you've been on in over a year, so welcome back.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brian. It's nice to be with both of you gentlemen. I enjoyed the one time I was on with you both. I think it was a program, and it was really a lot of fun, so I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, so do you want to kick off, Carolyn?
Likewise.
Yeah, Pete and I have done like 100 videos together, so you're like our special guest, you know, our good team. So this is Pete's idea. We have to defend the great one, people like Christopher John Bjerknes smearing his name. So do you want to start off, Carolyn?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, I want to emphasize, when you mentioned my book, I appreciate that. And I do call it my book, but, you know, it is actually basically a translation of Hermann Giesler's book that Wilhelm Christman and I did. And we have a lot of little extra items in there under our own names, you know, to help. The Barnes Review put or Paul Angel put our names on the cover. And I just couldn't, say no to that. So, but I do want to emphasize that it's not totally a book that I wrote, but I certainly had a lot to do with it, and I'm very proud of it. It's an excellent book. So, and it taught me a lot too, and it would teach anybody a lot who would read it. There's a lot in there that people really, it's true, they don't know, they wouldn't know, and even people who think they know all about Hitler. So this is a good way to start, because, you know, people think they know a lot about Hitler, and it turns out that there's so much to know, and they don't know that much, and they easily repeat things that are false, and there's so much false information going around that people pick that up and think it's valuable, or it's worthwhile, or it has some substance to it. That's the best way to put it, that it has some substance to it, and it when it doesn't have any substance, and that's how I see Christopher John Bjerknes and his stuff, you know. And we have to remember, he's a Jew, he's half Jewish. I remember back in the day when it was a long time ago, you know, when I first started in this, and I was paying attention to all these people, and Bjerknes had his site up then, but it was a lot more informative what he had then than what he has now. And I remember him writing how he was proud to be a Jew. He was proud of his Jewish heritage. And it was like on one side of his family, you know, I don't know if it was his father or mother, but he was proud of it. And
I think he's a quarter. I think he's a quarter Jewish. I think it's one of his grandparents is. I'm not sure about that.
Okay, that could be. No, yeah.
I don't know that it makes a difference.
That could be. No.
But just to be more accurate.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I appreciate it, because I didn't know. I should remember him talking about it, and then he didn't. I don't remember if he distinguished then what the amount was. So, okay, he's only a quarter Jewish. And when he wasn't always so, he didn't always say these things about Hitler that he's started saying now. And so I think he's been doing it for quite a while now, but he wasn't doing it back then. And I think that he's, he's a conspiracy person. He loves your total conspiracy thinking. And so he looks at things in that way that you don't interpret it in the normal way. You have to see different motives and nefarious motives behind everything. And you have to put things together in a totally different way. And so whether he believes it or not, I suppose he might. I don't know if it matters to him, but he thinks he can make a case like this to make Hitler out to be something that he wasn't, and what he does, I'm going on and on here, but what he does that I'd like to put it, he makes assertions. He doesn't so much prove or demonstrate anything, but he makes assertions. Well, Hitler was such and such. And often with these people, and there's others like him that we've talked about, they look at the fact that Hitler lost the war, that Hitler, they see Hitler as a bigger failure than we do. You know, I mean, they see him as a tremendous failure. So therefore, it couldn't have been accidental. It was all on purpose. And that's basically, as far as I see it, you guys can dispute that. That's basically his whole argument. And people like Condit and other people like that, he lost, and therefore he was doing it on purpose, because he wouldn't have made the decisions he made if he really wanted to win. That's their argument. What do you think?
I think that's a good point that you make. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. That because he lost, then automatically he was a shill, and it was planned from the beginning for him to lose. Mm-hmm. And I think it's essential that they put part of their scheme, of their cornucopia of conspiracy theories, that he ended up going to Argentina or Antarctica, because, see, that would prove that from the beginning he had a exit strategy, right? Because it was all planned. But
yeah, I like that. I think that's really important. Does Bjerknes say that? Does he assert that Hitler?
I'm not sure.
Left the bunker and went to Argentina. No, I'm not either.
So. I haven't heard him say that.
Okay,
you haven't.
It's a totally different thing. But I don't know if he denies that.
No, I would. That's pretty far out. I think
Condit,
he might be.
Condit believes that.
Oh, that he went to Argentina?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I did mention this is actually a Truth for Justice for German Society video for the audience. We have a Truth and Justice for German Society.com website and a playlist of videos. So this is on it, just so the audience to know. Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I would say I don't think probably Bjerknes doesn't go into that Argentina thing. So maybe we shouldn't go into it, but that the purpose of that, it seems to me, is to show that he wasn't sincere about Germany. He didn't care about Germany, and he got out. He had out, like you say, Pete. He had a plan to get out all along, and he was never intended to go down with Germany and all. So yeah, it's all.
It's part of the deal, isn't it? Uh-huh. And another big part is the this Dunkirk business that as if Hitler had a complete option, and that he could have captured all 300,000 of the Brits. But he says, no, let them go, because I'm a shill. I think maybe you can explain that better, Carolyn. But from what I understand, it wasn't that clear cut. It's not like Hitler could have, maybe a Monday morning quarterback might look at it that way and say, oh, yeah, he could have done this, he could have done that. But when you were on the scene, I don't think it was that clear cut that he could have.
No, captured. It never is. It never is, is it?
Right.
You know, that this is what these people engage in. Even people just talking on forums and comment sections and stuff, you know, that want to be anti-Hitler. They'll always say that he could have, you know, at Dunkirk, that just proves that, you know, I mean, he could have just taken over Britain and won the war. You know, he could have just done all that.
Pro-Hitler people say, well, he was so generous, he let them go because they wanted to have peace with Britain. Some people.
Well, that was a part of it. That was a part of it. But he didn't let it, you know, that was a part of it. Yeah, I think so, in my opinion. But it was a complicated situation, as Pete is saying, you know, and it wasn't as clear cut because they still had French troops from in the south coming at them, and they had threats from somewhere elsewhere up north. And so if he went all out for going to England or
Dunkirk, forgetting yeah, the soldiers.
Then
but he didn't want to get Paris as well.
They were vulnerable, and it was very important to secure that area that they had already won. If they had just let it, you know, not secured it, they would be still fighting against it and so on.
Yeah, and to take Paris,
and
right?
But I think the truth is Hitler never wanted to occupy Britain. In fact, I'm sure he didn't. You know, I'm positive.
Yeah, we're just talking about Dunkirk at this point.
Yeah, but
also
but
the
Dunkirk. What was the purpose of Dunkirk? What was the purpose of Dunkirk? What was he going to do with all those Brits? He also said that that mm-hmm. if he had captured them all, he didn't have the food to feed them with. And he did not, he said this, that he did not consider starving British soldiers. You know, he had a lot of respect.
80 million Germans can feed 300,000 Brits. That's not a problem, right? They captured over 1 million or 2 million Soviet soldiers, right?
Well, that's why they had trouble feeding them. They never thought they were going to capture all those all of a sudden like that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That was, they were surprised when they went into the Soviet Union that they just knocked it over, because there was all this stuff set up, you know, close to the border for an offensive attack against Germany. And that's why they didn't have any defense.
Just getting back to Dunkirk, though, I think it was too marshy for the tanks to get in.
The weather conditions.
That was one point that he made, yeah, that the weather wasn't cooperating. Goering had promised his Luftwaffe would go and strafe all of the bomb Britain, you know, and make everything safe for the Germans to go over there. And then the weather went absolutely backwards, you know, wrong, and it was all cloudy and everything, and the Luftwaffe couldn't fly. So that lasted for several days. So that, you know, was something that got in the way. So, but I think at the bottom, Hitler's plan was never to occupy Britain. He never intended to occupy Britain, and it would have been very, very difficult to do. Can you understand why it would be difficult to do?
Yeah, the Navy, right? The British Navy have to get across the water to get there and make a beachhead.
And then as he said, the British government and the royal family and all that would go to Canada, and the fleet would go to Canada and partly to the United States. I mean, they'd go across the ocean and they'd set up their government there, and he'd be left there with British people who were very angry. And we're not going to be, you know, British are not easily, they don't easily agree to just say, okay, you can take us over. We'll just give in, you know. And then he had to feed them too. And his concern was about the Soviet Union in the East coming in. And he was right about that. Now that's what Stalin was waiting for. He was waiting for Hitler to get all tangled up in Britain, you know, and in the West. And then when he didn't have any way to fight back very well, he'd come and invade from the East. And that's what would have happened. So it turned out that Hitler was aware of all these things, and he was right, and he did the right thing. And so when they say, oh, if he would have followed through with Dunkirk and so on, this thing would have all been over and he would have won. And you don't win the whole world by one thing like that. And then you still got all these enemies everywhere. You know, that's just, these people are unrealistic, but they focus people's attention on that. And then they just, I don't know, build on that he made mistakes, and his mistakes didn't have to be made. So that means he did it on purpose because, you know, he was working for the...
Sounds like a Monday morning quarterback.
That's it.
Hindsight. But what about Christopher John Bjerken saying, in 1919, Hitler joined the Communist Party, so he was secretly with him all the time. He was an agent for Stalin the whole time. So all of National Socialism, all of his statements criticizing Jewish power, all of this was some kind of a ruse. Like, it just seems ridiculous, doesn't it?
That's been answered. You know, that's been answered enough times. And it's known, and even establishment historians, even British historians, agree that Hitler was simply looking around to see what the scene was and what was going on, and and he was still in the army, and he was he was sympathetic to socialism. He's already had his socialist, you know, but national socialist. He still already had those. He didn't like the way the common people were treated. He knew they were treated wrong, and he knew in Germany they were not given a fair break, and that they were misused and abused and so on. So he was all for the working people. He had been working with these people. He said he learned a lot about them when he was still in Vienna, and then in Munich before the First World War. And during the war, these ideas kind of worked within him. And he was a tremendous patriot. I mean, some people say he was narrow-minded, that he didn't know anything but Germany and never wanted to go anywhere but, you know, be in Germany. And you know, that so they turned that, his patriotism and his love of Germany, into some kind of a failing, you know, that makes him a lesser person, you know, not very bright, you know, not adventurous. I would say he's pretty adventurous, you know. So where were we going with that?
Oh, yeah, I was just asking about Christopher John Bjerknes accuses Hitler of joining the communists in 1919.
Oh, yeah.
Secretly being with him the whole time.
Yeah.
For 25 years.
So there he was with no prospects, and so he stayed in the army, because as long as it was, you know, weren't forced to disband or anything, and lived in the barracks, and they made him a spokesman. His barracks mates, I mean his fellow soldiers, made him their representative to speak with. Now it's slipping my mind, but who he was speaking with. Speaking with the new government, which was the communist revolutionary government that took over for a little while. You know, that's where I need my notes to remember everybody's name, but you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Weimar Germany, like 1919.
I'm not speaking exactly of Rosa Luxemburg, but it was that group that did take over, made the Bavarian state a communist, socialist, part of a socialist Soviets type state. And they were in power for a while. And so Hitler was the spokesman of his barracks to these people who were the acting government at the time, these communists that had taken over. And then they got overthrown, you know, eventually by the Freikorps that had organized. And Hitler wasn't in the Freikorps.
Ernst Röhm was part of that, wasn't he?
Probably.
Weren't they shooting the communists believe so. Dead yes. in the street? And they
yes, yes, yes.
Rosa
so they
Luxemburg.
Had a big big war going on there, and the Freikorps won. The German patriots.
Shot in the streets.
Yeah, and Hitler was always a patriot, but he didn't like the establishment, and he was for the working man. And so he was kind of undecided, you know, he was kind of socialistic, but he didn't like the Bolsheviks, period, or the Jews either. So there you go. He was, you know, but he was a good representative for the soldiers. And then when the Freikorps won and took over, and they kicked out these communists, and they were no longer. And then I guess other people formed the Weimar government in Germany. It just all kind of happened fast around the same time. And then Hitler was selected by his superiors, who now were the patriotic German military, the Reichswehr, still was called the Reichswehr, to be a speaker for them, because they found that he was so effective speaking to people. And he was coming to that realization. He realized he was a very good speaker, and he was a better speaker than a writer. He always said he thought he was a better speaker than a writer, and he thought that speaking was far more effective than writing, and yeah, far more important.
The most powerful was speaking,
yes,
he said.
Yes,
yeah, that's so true today.
Yeah, and so that's what led him to go eventually to the to that a German Workers' Party meeting, because the Reichswehr wanted to know, you know, what they were about, because there was, everybody was suspicious of everybody, you know. I mean, he was, I guess, kind of part of the intelligence, not anything really subterranean or anything, but, and so he attended that meeting in order to just make a judgment, you know, bring back information on what he thought of the people who had formed that party. It wasn't very many people, about 10 people. There were now about 50 parties coming up in Germany at this time. You know, this was the time when there was just a proliferation of political parties.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen these figures. Yeah, it's at least that. I mean, they're astounding when you see them. Of course, you know, everybody was forming their own political party, because it was kind of, the emperor was gone. It was all, you know, new day, new time. And people were very, very active and involved in what was going on, because it was so up and so discordant and all. So he got up, he was gonna leave, he said. I love his, you know, I'm pretty familiar with Mein Kampf, but I do forget names and details and things if I can't go back and check them. But he got up and he was gonna leave that meeting, he said, but at the end somebody came along and brought up some question or some comment that aroused his displeasure. He didn't like it. So he got up and responded to that in the meeting. And he went on for a little while, I guess, not too long, but you know. And afterward, everybody was so impressed with him. I don't know if they applauded or what, but I mean, they were just, you know, he was like the star of the show. And he was just trying to answer this guy. And so he left the meeting, and then he got a message a few days later from this, from the president of this party, inviting him to join and their party, and maybe, you know, for free and all that. And they were gonna, you know, and.
They asked him to be a guest speaker too at the following meeting, right? That's in the movie, Adolf Hitler, The Rise of Evil. They show the whole biography. It's a really good movie, you know, about Hitler's life.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's a good movie? Are you sure it's accurate? You know,
well, the title's misleading.
The Rise of Evil?
I guess I have to do that for Hollywood, but if you actually watch the movie, I have a link on my foolsociety.com.
Yeah, I know. A lot of these things are supposed to be good, but that doesn't mean that everything in there is accurate. And I never go by movies. So
it's a dramatization of his in that first
meeting.
Yeah,
but you know, in Mein Kampf, he tells a story, and he says that he was after he got that invitation, after he had been to that meeting, he started thinking, because he had been thinking how he could form some kind of movement, how he could do it. But as he said, he had no following, no money, no nothing, zero. He was a zero, you know, according to influence. He had no influence whatsoever with anybody. So how could he do it? So then they invited him to this party, and he started to think, before he ever went back to it, that maybe, you know, maybe that would work out, because maybe he could, you know, function from this party and get a base and work from that. So he did go back. He went back, and they were so happy to see him. they were going to make him president right away. I mean, you know, they just were totally impressed. It was a very small group. And so that's what that's how he got started.
I wonder why they didn't make him president. I think it was, what, to 1921 or something? They made him president later, right? There's a little confrontation there. What was his name? Anton Drexler? That was the founder.
Drexler was all for him. He didn't wait until... Didn't wait. I don't know if he was president, but they wanted him to be there, and they acceded to his decisions and so on. What he thought, they were very agreeable to go along with it. There was no problem there. Now, if you think there was, I'd like to know what the source of that is.
Source is probably that misleading movie, Adolf Hitler, The Rise of Evil. They show a confrontation between him and Drexler, and Hitler says, I want you to resign and I should take over as leader. So maybe
I think that's probably, he did eventually say that he was going to do it his way. He was going to change the name and everything. And maybe there was some resistance from Drexler, but not much. Not much, because they felt that if they were going to have any future, it would be with this man, Adolf Hitler, and that so they went along with him. But there may have been some, but that's not in Mein Kampf, so I don't know where it comes from. And there's not too many sources where we get the true story of that, because no one is paying attention to it.
And so many lies, right? Like Christopher John Bjerknes just is probably piling on more lies, saying Hitler was a communist Zionist shill from the beginning.
Well, okay. What he says is just, you know, I don't even like to, you know, I didn't even want to answer anything of his, because I just don't think it gives it a standing that I don't think it should have. You know, what he says is ridiculous, and there's no reason, doesn't have to be defended, because it doesn't make any sense in itself. Particularly that, does Bjerknes, is he one that pushes this Hitler was a Rothschild stuff, or is that just...
You know, haven't really read, I briefly browsed at his books there against Hitler, the ones he, published fairly recently. I think it's a 3-volume set. Somebody had sent me 2 of those volumes, and briefly browse through them, but I didn't know what to make of them. So I don't know fully exactly what he says. But, you know, this whole thing started mostly with this video that Jim Condit had put out, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago about Hitler. And yes, he did claim that Hitler was a crypto Jew, or like Kluberger.
Yeah.
What was the actual name?
You mean his Schnickelgruber?
Schnickelberger?
Yeah. Schnickelgruber. Right. That was his.
It was Schnickelgruber. That was his grandmother's name.
Right. So
and
he
that's
claimed,
not Jewish.
Right, but he claims that she was working at the as a maid.
Well, Condit does, but does. Yeah, does Bjerknes claim that?
I don't know that.
You don't know.
No, I don't.
I don't either. And if we're going to talk about him, I don't want to confuse it with Jim.
I don't know much of what Bjerknes says.
I don't either.
Hitler was an agent for 26 years, from 1919 to 1945. Bjerknes is saying he was secretly an agent the whole time.
Agent to whom?
The communists and
British?
The Jews to undermine.
And the Zionists. Communist agent and Zionist agent.
Yeah.
So and everything what, he did,
what's
everything
the proof
he
of that?
Did.
There's no proof of that except what he says because of how he acted. That supposedly.
He's got 2 books worth of proof, maybe 3 books worth of proof, or what he considers proof. But I wasn't really prepared to go into detail about that because I don't really know exactly what he says. I just know that it's vile stuff. When I looked at it, it just kind of...
But it doesn't prove anything. What I'm saying, he calls it, you know, this is, I don't know if he calls it proof, but he calls it, this is why, you know, what supports what he says.
Right, but
it's wrong. I mean, I don't know what it is, actually.
Right. But Condit is the one that says for sure. That,
yeah, I know.
And others. And I guess I listened to the debate you had with him a few years back. And I think he was basing it on one book written by some Jewish guy. And I guess everybody's kind of basing that rumor on
that.
Well,
I've got that. You know what that book is? It's Before Hitler Came by Dietrich Bronder. Well, it was probably written in German, you know, but I don't know what... I've seen the German title very close. So, it looks very similar to the English title. Before Hitler came, this Jewish school teacher, Dietrich Bronder, it was written in 1964. And I say that Condon has not read it because he didn't know what was in it. And he said, he has said on his video, bombshell after bombshell, I'm sure. See, meaning he didn't read it, but he thinks that he's telling you that there's bombshell after bombshell in it. Well, Bronder just goes through and says all these Nazis under Hitler were Jews. He's got every one of them. He's got every one of them being a Jew, part Jew, or married to a Jew.
And Himmler.
Every one of them. And then this Henneke Cardell, who wrote the book Adolf Hitler, the Founder of Israel, you know, and I'm sure Bjerknes has read these books and uses them and, you know, takes stuff from them and so on. And it's just what Henneke Cardell, who's a Hungarian, what he wrote is just taken from what Bronder wrote. So it's almost like those two books are the same, you know, and they're just this, and the original Bronder is a Jew, and he was just, you know, he didn't like Hitler. He lived during that time. So when he wrote the book, you know, he was older, and putting it all out. But I mean, I've got, what I prepared for that debate with Jim Condon was a lot from that. And I've got all these National Socialists who were involved in Hitler's government and party down, and that he says were Jewish. And I've looked, and then I have all my research on them.
We should mention for the audience, this debate was in 2008 with you and Deanna Spingola and Jim Condon Jr.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Is that recorded anywhere that people, the audience can
find? You know what happened? You know what Deanna said? When I wanted to get that recording to post it on my site, she said that it had been, it had somehow gotten lost. It wasn't in the RBN. Think about this. They don't ever do that. It wasn't in the RBN archive there. It was blank or something, or there wasn't anything there. So somebody took it, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Download it and keep a copy of it?
I think there might. I think it's on archive.org.
Okay, so the audience
can look.
Do you know the title of it, what they would look for in archive.org?
I don't know. Debate. Jim Condit, Carolyn Yeager debate or something like that. This Henneke Cardell, he's weird. I looked him up. You can't find anything on him. And then there's this picture. I found this washed out looking photograph of him, which I have right here, that from the book, I guess, or somewhere. And he's just nondescript looking. You can't tell anything about him because it's not a good picture. And what's said about him is that he's the son of German scientist Rudolf Cardell. After completing Army Academy, he served as an infantryman in the German army in Russia and the Balkans. In 1979, he was sued by the German state, which also confiscated all his possessions. In 1982, he was acquitted without any expenses paid, you know, without any, I don't know, it's not written. Well, this is from translated from this book from Hungarian. Let's see, I've got something else here, but I think he's kind of well, just like so many of these guys, they just want to attack the Third Reich for whatever reason they want to do it.
So what was he?
My conclusion after really looking into him was that I questioned whether there is such a person named, you know, Henneke Cardell, who wrote this book. You know, I said it appears fraudulent to me. This book is so is so well known, you know, Adolf Hitler, the founder of Israel. But the history of it is very murky. So, and it was written for a Polish. It was written in Polish, and it was translated from this Afsenia Wido Nizja, in Warsaw. Now that's where it was published first in 1996. So this came to the attention, of course, of Jim Condit's mentor, and it plays a real important role in that his worldview.
Okay. Yeah.
But there's an interesting story about Goering. You know, they wanted to say that Goering was Jewish. He said that Goering was Jewish. You want to hear the story that I found out about Goering?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'll read it here. They say Goering was Jewish. Condit and B say, I guess, who's B? Maybe this other guy, Bronder. Where did it go now? Okay. Goering was born at Rosenheim, Bavaria. Rosenheim, that's where Rudel, Hans Rudel, who you liked so much, what I wrote about Hans Rudel in my book, The Pilot, the super brave hero pilot, Stuka pilot.
Oh, yeah. Hitler wanted him as his successor.
Yes, right,
right. He's so respectful and, people.
He was from, he died in Rosenheim. It's where he was living when he died.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Anyway, Goering was born there. This is Rosenheim, Bavaria, and all that Bavaria region is full of really good German patriots and National Socialist type thinkers. And anyway, he was born in one of five siblings. His father was a German colonial official. His mother, a peasant girl. His godfather was Dr. von Eppenstein, born Hermann Eppenstein, and he was a half Jew. This was his godfather, not any blood relation. You know,
well, I guess that proves that Goering was a Jew, I suppose.
Yeah, there you go. And he was this Jew had a castle, a romantic setting for Hermann's boyhood. So Hermann was educated at home, and at boys' schools and at officer cadet school. He entered the military academy at Gross Lichterfelde outside Berlin in 1910. And he had a half brother who was supposedly Voltaire. You remember Voltaire was a guy who was on the scene as a commenter way back in these days when I started. And he was pretty well known, but he's disappeared entirely now. I didn't agree with him. I wonder, most of the time, but he acted like he knew everything. He said Hermann Goering had a half brother who was a half Jew, Albert Goering. But I say, even if true, it doesn't make Goering Jewish. That if he had a half brother who was a half Jew, that means that his mother,
was not Jewish then, if Goering was not Jewish.
No, his mother or someone had a relationship with a Jew, you know, and
yeah,
but
Goering's dad wasn't Jewish.
Well, I don't think so. You know, I don't think any of them were Jewish. But this Dr. von Eppenstein was half Jewish. So, but it doesn't make Goering Jewish. Okay, the rumor is that Albert was sired. This is the rumor that Hermann's brother Albert was sired by von Eppenstein, making Albert only a one-quarter Jew, but that is speculation only. And then so more on Goering. His father was the first governor general of the German protectorate of Southwest Africa, modern day Namibia, as well as being a former cavalry officer and member of the German consular service. He had distinguished ancestors. His mother was from a peasant family, and his father's second wife, she was his father's second wife. That's what it was. His father was married previously, and so maybe Albert was from his other wife. Let's see if I've got this. Goring was named after Arminius, who defeated Hermann, you know, who defeated the Roman legions at Teutoburg Forest. And Hermann, that's his father. The godfather, Hermann Eppenstein, did not become his godfather until Albert was born in 1895. He was a Christian of Jewish descent. He had converted to Christianity. Eppenstein's father was an army surgeon in Berlin. His father, after the war, became a wealthy physician and businessman. Eppenstein's father, the godfather's father, was an army surgeon in Berlin, and after the war became a wealthy physician and businessman. I remarked typical Jewish rising, you know, typical Jew rising up in the ranks. In other words, he became rich and bought a manor title, becoming Hermann Ritter von Eppenstein. He purchased two old castles in Bavaria, in Salzburg, and renovated them. Later, the relationship cooled, and the Goring family no longer lived in the castle. Eppenstein married a singer half his age and bequeathed his estate to her. Now, he left everything to this singer that he had married and nothing to Hermann Goring. So, you know, from ties like that, these people will come up, and some of them don't even have that as far as I know, but these people will come up with saying, well, he was Jewish.
That's ridiculous, then. It's just a total lie.
His parents were friends with this Christianized Jew from early, you know, long before the Third Reich, and then he wanted them to spend a lot of time in his castle, which I guess they did. His mother must have liked it. So it cooled. So anyway, I thought that was a very interesting story about Goring.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. It's good to have that kind of detail, I think, on the show. I like that.
Well, I don't know. Probably took too long. Sorry.
Yeah, so what else are we talking about?
Yeah, where's Pete? Pete hasn't said anything for a while.
I'm here. Well, look, there's a few points here, so we're going to maybe skim, you know, kind of cover some of them. Along with the idea that Hitler was allegedly a card-carrying communist there and just playing a role, you know, a fake Führer, one of their allegations is this, and tell me what you think of this, Carolyn. I hadn't heard of it until recently, but I brought it up with Condit, and he says, oh, yeah, that's true. So, okay, he says, when Hitler was close to invading Moscow and finishing off the commies once and for all, he betrayed his own army by telling them to stop advancing and not sending them sufficient ammunition, thus allowing the Russians to beat them. That all this was orchestrated by the evil Hitler, apparently. Can you?
That's just totally crazy. You know, I mean, that's just totally a false.
I know.
Story. I mean, that's not the way it worked at all. Well, it was Hitler.
They cite this one book, and I guess Condit would probably have the name of it.
Yeah, one book. One book.
Of this guy that's got the skinny on the whole thing there, and proves, you know, why this is so. But that was just.
Book is that? Please. You gotta come up with the book.
Oh, it's a secret. Only Condit knows.
Yeah. So have you heard anything like this before?
Oh, well, I hear all these stuff about Hitler's terrible decisions and how he interfered and caused losses that shouldn't have happened and so on. It's just like the Dunkirk stuff. So
Michael
the truth
Robin
is
talks that way, right?
The truth is that,
Yeah.
Well, and you know, in my book, which I call my book, Hermann Giesler's, the translation of Hermann Giesler's book, Hitler talks to Giesler a lot about this. There's a lot about this Moscow in it. But it doesn't go into battle details or any of the stuff that these guys like to trade back and forth, you know, when they're doing their Monday morning quarterbacking and their hindsight, you know, judgments of what should have happened. But it does, Hitler does explain real clearly that, and it's true that, because most good books will cover this, that he did not want to target Moscow first. And this is what all generals at that time still, they thought you go to the capital, right? You go to the capital, you take the capital, and you've got the country, you know. Excuse me, you've got the control center and so on. And Hitler's generals wanted to go straight to Moscow because it's not that far in, you know, from the border. And they figured that was what they wanted to do. Hitler had a totally different plan, which he worked out. And we have a map of it in our book because he drew this map for, this not a map, but a little diagram kind of mappy thing. For Giesler, while he was talking to him, Giesler either saved it or he reproduced it. I think he did reproduce it. I don't think it was the original drawing by Hitler. But and what Hitler wanted to do, because he was always worried about resources, especially oil, you know, but other resources too, and enough food for the soldiers. And you know, Stalin. His generals performed this scorched earth policy when they were retreating in the beginning from the German advance, and they were burning everything up and, you know, destroying every bit of food they could manage, even though the people that were still left behind, the Russians that were left behind, didn't have anything to eat, but, you know, they didn't care. So he was concerned about that, and he had this plan. He had, you know, they had Army Group North and Army Group Center and Army Group South, and these were big army groups. And the South was to go down into Romania area and get the oil fields down there, major oil fields. Germany was getting oil from Romania at the time, but it couldn't be depended on because the Soviets, you know, of course, were targeting Romania too. And so he wanted that, and he wanted to go up north. He wanted the North group to take Leningrad because that was a key place to, well, I can't think at the moment of all the reasons, but a key launching pad for Germany and Finland and the Baltic states and so on. That the Germans had liberated from the Soviets, you know, already and were holding. And so that was a very powerful position. He wanted to take Leningrad. And he also considered Leningrad the home of the Bolshevik Party, just like Nuremberg was the home of the National Socialist Party. That was the home of the Bolsheviks, not really Moscow. And he wanted to take that. For all those reasons. And then a pincer movement, you know, Hitler is famous for succeeding with pincer movements to then close in on Moscow from the front and behind, not just coming from the front, and take Moscow last. And these generals didn't want to do this. And these famous generals that like Manstein and the ones that everybody brags about knew everything, and Hitler didn't know anything. They didn't want to do that. They thought that was too long, took too much from them, and they wanted to go straight to Moscow. So then Hitler got ill. This was the time, shortly in late 1941, that he got very ill, and he was unable to lead. He said he was unable to have the strength to persuade them, because he was always having to persuade the generals. He didn't give orders and say, you do this, and because I said so, and I didn't want any talk back from you. You know, that's the way they like to present him. He didn't do that. He worked up plans. He worked on his arguments. He got it. They had conferences all the time, Hitler and his generals, and they were respectful, and he wasn't, you know, ordering people around. He was persuading them to see what his plan was and why it was best. And usually, you know, because he was the Fuhrer and he was the commander in chief, you know, they agreed to do it. But in this case, he was ill and he couldn't do it. And so they got together, and they did. I've got stuff about this in that book. They got together and conspired, said, we're not going to do Hitler's plan. They had, you know, and they were supposed to do it, but they said, we're not going to do it. You know, we're going to do this. And anyway, and so they did, and they were heading toward Moscow. Well, what happened was the weather got really bad, and Stalin was bringing more and more troops, fresh troops in from the east. And, you know, Germany was pretty strained by that time. The Russians had lost a huge amount, and they were strained, but Stalin had access to all these more troops from the east and all this ammunition. And I'm not just ammunition, I mean,
a much bigger population than Germany, right?
Yeah, well, they had these factories in the east that Hitler didn't, and his intelligence knew nothing about. And that's what his conversation with Mannerheim, Finland was about, that famous recorded conversation, that, you know, he had no idea that they had all that, but they had all these factories back there, and they were working, you know, people were just working day and night. They didn't get any break, and producing tanks and planes and bombs and whatever, all the rifles and.
Hey, Carolyn, how about the Lend-Lease agreement? Wasn't that a factor that kicked in around this time? Weren't they Russians receiving a whole lot of aid from the United States?
Also? I don't think that's what made the difference. I can't say for sure about Lend-Lease. I think, I don't know, because we're still in 1941, you know. When did Lend-Lease, I have to refresh
myself. It started early. Initially it was for Great Britain.
Well, it might.
But then it was expanded to send, I think they sent us about $12 billion worth of equipment and tanks and everything.
Yeah, well then that would be it too. See, Hitler didn't mention that when he was talking to Giesler. But that's what I'm going by, mostly.
He probably didn't know, right?
Well, he would have known about Lend-Lease, yeah. So you're probably right, Pete.
I don't know the timing of it, but I thought that made.
Well, we should look into that and be.
Because they say what they say. Stalin had a nervous breakdown when Hitler, you know, was making.
Yeah, when he first came in,
yeah,
when
November 22nd,
but he recovered. He recovered because his generals went and talked to him and made
him. I think Avril Harriman covered for him during Stalin's nervous breakdown.
Right.
The New World Order family leader, Avril Harriman, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I don't know. I don't go into that. So anyway, he was able to bring all this in the battle for Moscow. And suddenly, these German generals were faced with more than they could handle. They couldn't do it. And they failed. They couldn't get through the Russian resistance was powerful and much stronger than they had anticipated and that it had been previous to that. And that's what caused that to fail. It wasn't Hitler at all. It was just the opposite of what they say.